morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
It's Mike Cosentino.
And joining us today is one of our producers and writers,
Gary LeMaster.
We're glad you're back, and we're glad you're sitting flying left seat again. And so it looks like the universe has back in order because...
Well, you need a conservative base here.
He's back sitting upright.
Exactly.
We're going to talk about the VA and the recent VA scandal. And we want to do our part to just add some background information, a little bit of the history of the VA, how it goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War. But it's almost nothing back in those days. So we want to do a little bit about the history. We should talk a little bit, guys, about the size of the VA. It's this huge agency, 300,000 employees, and it does a vast number of different things. So the scandal has been about the Veterans Health Administration, which is a part of the VA.
Right.
And it's gone through all these consolidations and reforms and so forth and so on. So, Gary, you want to get a little rundown how the VA gets going, why it gets going. We all know why. We can all guess why.
Well, basically, it started Continental Congress in 1776 passed an act that would encourage enlistments during the Revolutionary War by providing pensions for soldiers who were disabled. Obviously, that was a concern. People didn't want to volunteer.
And then they didn't provide the money for those pensions, did they? They relied on the states and localities to provide the money, which didn't work great.
They did provide pensions, but the medical and hospital care was provided by individual states and communities. Mm-hmm. So the VA health benefits didn't exist at that point. In 1811... Congress authorized the first medical facility in domiciliary.
This is where, you know, aging veterans lived. I know when I was young, we still had World War One veterans around. You know,
veterans homes. The old
veterans homes.
That's the most outstanding
from
feature.
From our generation, remember them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most outstanding feature of the Prescott Veterans Hospital are what used to be. All the domiciles.
And they're still there. I know people go over and volunteer over at the domiciles with some really quite old guys. We're old, but these guys are even older than we are.
As a kid, I still remember seeing World War One vets and actually a few Civil War vets sitting out on the on the lawn of veterans homes.
Back in Oklahoma, I remember seeing, you know, wounded vets, guys without a leg and some sort of crude device to get around. Used to be out on the streets and it was huge. So
it was authorized in 1811, but the first facility didn't open until 1834.
Right. So it took them a few years.
There you go. That's the VA I know.
then in the 19th century, the Veterans Assistance Program was expanded to include benefits and pensions for veterans and widows and dependents. So, and it's been expanding basically ever since. Yeah.
And what happens that provoked the modern VA or the series of steps that lead to the modern VA is World War One, right?
Right.
Because before that, the American Army is very small and the number of people getting benefits is very, very small. But World War One brought in, 5 million vets, did you say, Gary?
I think it was 4 million that came in from World War One, and then World War Two, it jumped to 15 million World War II veterans. So you had, by that time, 19 million veterans eligible for
Remember, folks, that with the modern American army, this huge army, is post-World War II. So when my grandfather was in the regular army between the world wars, the regular army was very, very small. It wasn't a lot of guys, and they had trouble ramping it up for World War II. So a lot of the crisis of benefits occur after wars, right, Gary?
Yes. The real issue when it comes down to it that has caused us problems with the VA is that we're always at war. You know, I did some research a few years ago that we've been at war all but 33 years of our existence, and that was by my figures. Others have said that we've been at war all but 7 years of our existence. So if we keep going to war, we keep creating more and more veterans.
And the VA, the health was focused on war injuries, right? That's where it started.
Right.
And in fact, there's an editorial in the Arizona Republic this last Sunday saying that they should return to their focus on war-related injuries and let the rest of the stuff go. I don't know what you guys think about that, but there's certainly people talking about it.
The other factor is the economist says that battlefield medicine has improved so much that we left fewer soldiers on the battlefield, and the VA gets to handle more mangled bodies of veterans. And that's one of the reasons the numbers are so high, even if you do as the Republic suggests and just go back to
The other thing that happens is the number of men in the military, and it was for a long time just men, who were actually in combat, the percentage was much higher, say, in the Civil War, Spanish-American War, or World War One, even World War Two. It's now many, many fewer. That the support for the guys who are doing the actual aggressive fighting is getting larger and larger. And some people, there was a time where they wanted to limit it to only people who had been in combat, and there was this big fight in Congress about whether the VA should be limited to actually combat veterans.
Well, that's true, but what they found, I believe, the backlash there would be that sort of diminished the role of the support people, and you couldn't. And like in all support functions, you need both to get the job done. And so I'm not sure that even that suggestion will fly. So you have to cut it off somewhere. The VA cuts it off at income. The magic number is $34,000 or somewhere in that neighborhood, $33,000, $35,000. If a veteran makes more than that, and he doesn't have a service-connected disability, then he usually doesn't get services. Now, this is the government we're talking about.
So you have a service-connected disability so that you don't
Yes. So my job this morning is to give a little local color on the VA here and what we have in the state of Arizona. And as all veterans know, we have a clinic in Cottonwood. We have an aging hospital in Prescott that does certain things. We have a great big hospital in Phoenix that does certain things, and then we have one attached to the University of Arizona where all the cardiology cases and a few other specialties are performed. So the best thing that happened to the VA is to hook up with the U of A and have their cardiology done by these incredible group of physicians down there and the school. Phoenix VA, it has its problem. I don't need to tell you. You know, it's all over the news. We're going to talk about it as the show goes on. We're going to talk about the whistleblower. We're going to talk about what is happening at VAs across the country, the Prescott VA included over there on Indian School.
What's the VA budget and what's the VA health budget? Do you have figures like that, Gary?
I actually have those.
I thought you might. While Gary,
there's 6.5 million veterans right now getting services from the VA. That's a lot.
Just to put things in perspective, in 2009, the budget for the VA was $87.6 billion. In 2012, the budget was $132 billion. And the budget request for 2014 was $152.7 billion. And then on top of that, I forgot to look it up, but they just passed, the Senate just passed a bill that would expand it. You know, the Bernie Sanders and McCain bill that would expand the budget even more.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, but we're talking about three aircraft carriers here.
It's the second largest budget item for the federal government.
And I believe it's the third or fourth largest agency in the government. It's a huge agency now.
So 280,000 people plus, you know, depending on where you, what source you rely on, that that work in VA medical facilities, clinics, and benefits offices.
Yeah, and it's broken down by the health part of it's broken down into sectors, and I think there's 17 of them that are scattered across the country. So we're combined in Arizona with part in with New Mexico and part of West Texas.
And that was in the recent scandal. That sector was the one that was found to be most problematic by far. The other thing I think people tend to forget is that the VA is a lot more than just healthcare. You know, it does.
Yeah, people do forget that. That's a good point.
All sorts of, you know, it's a veterans, VA is a Veterans Affairs department. So it does all sorts of things ranging from the GI Bill with
which has been increased
to college education and other forms.
Bush increased it, and then Obama extended the benefits. I think they almost doubled to $90,000 worth of education benefits now.
And then it even goes so far as to include cemeteries. You know, there's lots and lots of military cemeteries scattered around the country, and then also in Europe and other places overseas.
You know, when my father died, they sent us an American flag.
Well, that's true.
And he could have been buried in a military cemetery, but
the topic today is VA healthcare.
Yeah, and the scandal starts for. Yeah, I was looking and doing some research like Gary, and the VA has gone through a whole series of scandals and mini scandals and stuff.
It's been a scandal almost from the start.
Right.
And something.
And I must admit when Obama appointed General, Shinseki. I thought, guy, here's a 4-star general. He really must understand all the problems. He's been wounded himself in Vietnam, had his foot damaged or blown off. And he had a reputation for honesty, being a straight on guy.
He was the general that waved warning flags over the invasion of Iraq, saying that in order to occupy the country, we were going to need, you know, far more military personnel than the administration.
And that got forced out of the service,
they forced him out. The other thing I'd like to point out with Shinseki is that when he was appointed by President Obama, his primary charge was to cut the backlog of people who have had applied for benefits. There was a huge backlog. And so his primary focus was on that and cutting homelessness for veterans. And he did remarkable things on both fronts.
If you go to the VA website, it's kind of sad because it's all this enthusiastic stuff about when Shinseki was doing all this stuff. Their first item on their list of things that they wanted to do was eliminate veteran homelessness, which they have been fairly successful. The second was one Gary is talking about, enabling 21st century benefits delivery and services, automating GI Bill benefits. So they were trying to computerize and stuff, improving veterans' mental health. They had a whole work list of things they were going to focus on. And they had this general, they increased the budget, and we still had a disaster.
Part of my problem is that we are carrying the right wing's water here. The three liberals around this table, the three reasonable men here who just want to feed children.
Three or two.
All the reasonable men around this table who just want to see children fed and you know, an education funded. Really simple things like that. This is part of the incantation of the right. This is a president who, for the election, is going to establish a legacy on healthcare. So we got the Obamacare daily, hourly, minute-by-minute complaints, and everybody, now forget about the 8 million people that are getting services and people I know that are functioning today because of Obamacare. So then the VA scandal, this is an incompetently run healthcare. So those people on the right, and then of course we can't forget Benghazi. So you're going to hear this constantly from the right-wing press, which is owned and operated by conservatives in this country. You're going to hear Obamacare, you're going to hear VA scandal, and you're going to hear Benghazi from 100 times a day.
The other thing that the Times had an interesting article, New York Times, about the wait list, the wait time for various doctor's appointment. I know when I went to have a consultation on back surgery, when I called one place, it was 7 weeks to the consultation, and then how long was it going to be to the surgery? And I looked for somebody who could do it quicker than that. But apparently, just like the VA, the amount of waiting time, we have this picture of you just going right in. But for example, the study showed that the average of 29 days nationally to see a dermatologist for a skin exam, 66 days to have a physical in Boston, 32 days for a heart evaluation by a cardiologist in Washington. All this stuff is before Obamacare even gets in things. There are much more, there's much longer waiting time than people think. And what it says is, in our market.
So you're talking normal waiting time.
Yeah, I'm just talking to civilian.
Not Obamacare.
VA.
Right. As we all have general medicine.
How long it is to get a VA appointment. But people are not facing up to the fact that it takes a long time depending on what's wrong.
Absolutely.
Now, it says in our market-based system, patients can get a lucrative procedures rapidly. Even when there's no urgent medical need, a new knee, MRI, Botox injection, you'll probably be scheduled within days. But if you're an asthmatic who has whose breathing is deteriorating, or a diabetic whose medicines need to be adjusted, or an elderly patient with unusual chest pain, it can be much, much longer to see a physician. So the sort of market-based medicine, the wait times vary much longer than people realize, even out of the VA.
The answer for wait times in our market-based system is that it depends. And the greater the specialty, often the longer the wait. And the right has used that to hammer the Canadian healthcare system and other universal care systems. For as long as I can remember, they always talk about the Canadians they get tired of waiting, and so they come down for surgeries in the U.S.
There's some truth to it. In Canada, the waiting times are longer, but there are countries in Europe whose waiting times are shorter.
Right.
Socialized medicine, or whatever you want to call it, healthcare for everybody, whose waiting times are shorter than our waiting times.
Well, the Canadians I know, and I know quite a few of them, are always puzzled by the attacks on their from the U.S. on their healthcare. And say that in some cases you have to wait if it's not a pressing ailment, but in most cases you don't have to wait.
So with the VA, we have what I find disturbing, Mike Garriott, is that we have President Obama coming and he runs on better veterans care. He raises the budget for Veterans Administration tremendously.
He hires
this brilliant general to run the system. And then we have the disaster that we see before us emerging from the scandal coming first out of Phoenix.
So what does that tell you? It tells you the problem wasn't with the leadership, the problem was with the system.
Gary and I were talking before the show, one of the other managers of the VA was denounced by the American Legion was General Omar Bradley, one of the great generals of World War II.
Best loved.
Yeah. Shinseki is not the first general who's had trouble running the VA.
No, and the scandals go back to the very beginning of it. And at one point, they took the management of the system away from the government and found that it was even more problematic. So they you know, FDR re-centralized the management of the VA and
then they decentralized it. Now they claim they can't have the reason they can't inspect the local offices like here in the Southwest is because now the system's decentralized. It's hard for them to do inspections.
The fact is, I think the real problem is not even the system so much as it's people within the system. I mean, anyone who was, you know, keeping two sets of books, you know, for appointments. I mean, that's just obviously wrong.
Well, that's
on
what
the
I
face
meant when
of
I said the system. I'm talking about the culture, the VA culture within the system is just need, you know, that's where the overhaul needs to take place. We're talking about down to the reservation appointment person. The other fix I think would be we have a healthcare system, we have a VA system. Let's let the healthcare system take care of the veterans, and let's let the VA system take care of those veterans that have only, as the Republic calls for, those severe battle-induced traumas that actually the VA, Walter Reed, and other hospitals do better than
the world leaders in
civilian
complex,
VA. But let the rest of the veterans, we got 6.5 million, let them go to traditional VA and have the government pick up the traditional health care and have the government pick up the tab.
You mean like basically just have them do Obamacare, affordable health care?
Have them do Medicare.
And subsidize their affordable health care. And then they can go to any physician.
The Insurance Reform Act, I'm not sure, is up to the task. But the Medicare, yeah, give veterans Medicare. Enroll them all on Medicare as soon as they get out.
You know, there's another side to this that I'd like to point out is that, you know, what you're really looking at is the problems of a big, you know, huge bureaucracy. And so all the people that hate government always point to that sort of thing. Mm. But I can tell you, I've dealt with a lot of large private sector bureaucracies that are every bit as bad, you know, you have people that, you know, scam the system, you know, wherever they are.
And I've seen that in the private sector too, which is where I work most of my life and when you have a demanding boss who's demanding stuff that you can't do.
Right.
You start manipulating your statistics. You do more, you fudge stuff. It's just, once it looks like you're being asked to do something unreasonable. You have too many cases and not enough doctors, and you're getting punished for not doing the impossible. Then you have, I think, a real pressure to just make crap up.
I totally agree. And I'd like to point out some of the success of the VA health system is that it went through a major reform in 1995 through 2000 under the Clinton administration, and they closed 55% of their acute care hospital beds, increased patients treated by 24%, had a 48% increase in ambulatory care visits, and decreased staffing by 12%. And by 2000, the VA had 10,000 fewer employees than in 1995. And 104% increase in patients treated. Yet they managed to maintain the same cost per patient, same cost of care per patient day, while all other facilities had risen over 30 to 40% over the same period.
But was that a good idea, Gary? I mean, they kept the cost down, they laid off people, and they increased the number of veterans getting treatment. And
again, the answer is it depends. At that point, healthcare costs were skyrocketing across the board, and they were actually giving better care. They were recognized for giving better care at less cost, substantially less cost than, you know, virtually any other, you know, system, including private care. It just became more efficient. Then we saw, you know, with the Iraq War and the Afghan War, we saw another rise in the number of veterans coming into the system with, you know, very traumatic injuries. And one of the biggest, scandals that's a kind of a, It's more problematic now than it was in previous wars is PTSD. It used to be called shell shock. And in World War II, for example, in Korea, you know, the soldiers would be in battles and then for a period of time and then sent back for R&R. With modern day wars, we've had, soldiers with, 5, 6, 7 deployments. And when they're deployed, they're in constant harm's way.
One of the criticisms is that the VA expanded its mission to post-traumatic stress disorder, that became a major.
How could you not? You got all of your veterans. You got 90, as far as I'm concerned, every veteran, every American man that was sent somewhere, put in a uniform, had a gun put in his hands, suffers from some level of PTSD. I don't care what it is. And it's not like the kinds you see in the movies. But so you have a veterans healthcare system and you have all of these veterans suffering from this condition. How could you not expand into PTSD?
And they don't have enough psychologists to treat them. So what they do is they hire private psychologists on contracts, which is, of course, horribly expensive. And also, I think many of the psychologists travel from one, I'm talking about in the Army now, travel from one base to another, so they don't have a continuity. They have.
Well, I see this, once again, if you had veterans in here, they would go back, to culture. You got an organization that, and we were talking about this before the show, that PTSD was a mental condition that marked you for life, whatever you wanted to call it, shell shock. Back in the day, PTSD in the last 20 or 30 years, say 30 or 40 years, it was the mark of Cain. You didn't want PTSD treatment unless you needed it because it went on your record and forget about anything. It was treated as a willful mental illness, as if you could will yourself it, and you can will yourself out of it. As long as you were frosty enough. You can get through anything. If you were man enough, you can get through it.
We've learned so much about it. There's the famous incident of General George Patton slapping a soldier in the hospital who was suffering from shell shock, and he called him a coward and had him removed from the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, that was the understanding of it at that point.
And continued for the next 40 years.
Right.
The other thing I think that might make it a good point is a lot of it is not that it's not that severe. There are all different levels of
exactly.
it, all of
oh,
which
for sure.
are treatable.
Yeah.
It's a fairly treatable mental condition. People can help you, and it's not all. I think, but you're right, Mike. It's not all stereotypes. It's sometimes fairly minor things. Adjustment to
there's a recent documentary by an organization called Vice, news organization that. Kind of focused on the other scandal in the VA, and that is with soldiers, veterans suffering from PTSD that they, if they can't get counseling or if the counseling isn't fairly immediately successful, they basically just give them some heavy duty drugs and send them away.
Yeah.
And that's been one of the things that's been most responsible for the rise in suicides of veterans.
In my experience as a veteran and talking about it, give us meaningful work, give us a lot of beer, and some women to chase. And we're in good shape.
Not politically correct.
Where do I sign up for this?
We will take or men, if you're out. We'll take care of our own PTSD. I mean, that's what most veterans did after they got home from wherever they came from. And I don't care if they did their whole tour of duty in Mississippi or New Mexico.
So let's look at the scandal. Now, we've talked a lot about a lot of the different issues circling around the Veterans Administration or the Veterans Health Administration, which is the guys who deliver the care. The scandal breaks, I guess, in early 2012. There's the first whistleblower starts saying something. And then it's this last year, isn't it? What is it? 2014. Arizona Republic does, I guess, probably the most extensive reporting on it because it It starts with a man named Dr. Sam Foote, who's a doctor of internal medicine at Phoenix VA, and he files a complaint with the inspector general alleging that purported successes in reducing the wait times are manipulating the data. And he says that vets are dying waiting for appointments. That's the charge. That's the real charge.
And he did this after he retired before, you know, blowing the whistle, maybe in order to blow the whistle more effectively.
So he blows the whistle, and you know, when the thing first happened, we said, you know, wait and see how extensive it is. But the investigations to date suggest that he was right about the extents. In fact, it occurs not only in the southwestern region, but up in Wyoming and so forth and so on, that he was basically right. It's always good to look at the data. I think there's still questions about how many people died waiting for stuff, because that's it's really tricky. See, if you go to a hospital that has a really great reputation, they operate on you and it doesn't work, you think, well, you know, it didn't work. If you go to the Veterans Administration where people are saying, oh, they are terrible, and then you have an operation, it doesn't work, you think, oh, this guy did something wrong. You know, so there's that kind of, I don't know, what do you call that in sociology, Mike? A kind of
bandwagoning.
Yeah, there's kind of bandwagoning. So
it's the most recent scandal is just this past week, I think it was. This is the problem with all bureaucracies, is that they have rules, and so people are bound by those rules. And a veteran had a heart attack outside the clinic in Phoenix, and the VA has a rule, the bureaucracy has a rule that you must call for an ambulance to transport him. He was 300 yards away from the ER. And so they called the ambulance, and it was a matter of like 10 minutes or something by the time the ambulance got there, and he died in the ER because of the delay.
Like when I was working in New York, a guy had an attack, a really scary, scary attack, and the cops came first. In New York, the police always come to any emergency call. And we waited and waited for the ambulance service. And the guy said, I'm not going to use the language they use. They said, blank this.
we know what he said.
And they just hauled him down and put him in the police car and took him to the hospital. Right. So, I mean, this kind of stuff does happen.
It's the fault of somebody, an employee, not using their own judgment and just following a dictate by the bureaucracy.
And we are a little, you know, you always need to be a little bit skeptical. So, Sam Foote. Accused Representative Kirkpatrick of not responding to his letter. He sent her a duplicate after he had sent it to other people.
He sent one to McCain.
And then he sent it to Kirkpatrick, and he said that she didn't do anything. And of course, then they found the email that she had sent on, because she's on the Veterans Committee. She sent the email on. Her staff sent the email on. And then he claimed that they sent it on to the investigating committee right away. She's the first one who actually asked for an investigation in the House the VA committee.
Right.
So he accused her of not responding, and they said, well, maybe we didn't respond. We just sent the thing on. And then they found out that they had responded to him. And they had responded to him, and they had asked him to do a conference call to explain more details about his letter. And he never answered them. So even whistleblowers have their flaws. They said, well, you know, it turns out not only wasn't true that they didn't respond, but also you're the one who didn't respond. You didn't go on the conference call. Why did you do that? And he said, well, it was all past it by then. It was too late.
And McCain was copied on that same letter, and I have yet to see any evidence that McCain responded. And McCain's office in Phoenix is a few miles away from the VA hospital. And I have to say, I've dealt with senators and congressmen on trying to help out, you know, veterans, with disabilities to get help. You know, and the VA is like all bureaucracies is difficult with many levels. what I found was with Senator Mark Dayton and before him Paul Wellstone did wonderful things. All you had to do is call their office, and things got solved quickly.
Yeah, I know of cases where Kirkpatrick has helped people get into hospitals and stuff. So, but the thing is, even the point I'm trying to make, guys, is just that even when you have a whistleblower who did the right thing, he does stuff wrong. It's best not to lionize everybody. It's best not to believe the first reports. Wait till you have some serious investigation. The investigations about the deaths, whether deaths occurred, how many, are still ongoing.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of stuff that we don't know.
And with people waiting for appointments, I think, you can't blame the victim, but I do think that if I was waiting for an appointment and I had some serious ailment, I think I would be, causing some ruckus. So I think they bear some responsibility.
I don't know. A lot of the people I know, VA is their only medical insurance.
Right, yeah.
They have no medical insurance.
Right.
They're dependent on the VA. They have to drive all the way over to Prescott. It takes them a long time to get an appointment, or even if they get it, when it takes a short time, they still have to go all the way over there to get treatment. And until recently, none of them had any medical insurance. And I had a recent back operation. I haven't seen all the bills yet, but one of them for just one part of it was $25,000.
Don't look at them.
Yes. Yeah. You can't do this on your own, folks. You need medical insurance. And so the guys are really dependent on the VA, and that's one reason that they didn't care about affordable health care or stuff, because they had coverage. But many of them are attached to it. And again, I heard people saying that service was getting much better. I wanted to ask you guys before we can go back to, if you got something, Mike, but.
Yeah, I want to go for the three fixes, but what do you want to ask?
I wanted to ask what you thought. Now, first time Obama goes for a general with the spectacular record,
yeah,
and that doesn't work. He can't really change. He's an insider guy, brilliant as he is, dedicated, hardworking. He can't change the VA. Now he's brought in an outsider, a man who used to run Procter & Gamble, huge company. I have a little bit of experience with Procter & Gamble. I think Gary does, too. It's run like a military organization.
Yeah.
Of all the people that we did audiovisual shows, Procter & Gamble were the scariest bunch of guys in the group.
All in pinstripe suits and wingtips and club ties, and that's the dress code, or at least.
Well, something like that. We've been talking about culture for the VA culture for the last 45
minutes.
Can
he change it, though?
Well, it sounds like. I don't know if he's a kick-ass guy. It sounds like he's going to be able to change the culture. But the Republic calls for three fixes, and maybe he'll read these three fixes. First of all, is to downsize. And we talked about that already, how to downsize, maybe by going back to what the VA does best, which leads to, and that's the real trauma, the trauma where the VA research has led the world. And that's the, what they call intervention. Complex intervention is what the VA does best, according to the Republic. And that's what we were talking about. PTSD, they know more about head injuries, PTSD, other things. And the third thing was enact a zero tolerance for lying to the boss and a zero tolerance for the boss lying to himself or herself.
I think that's the biggest part of your fix.
I found that
most
last
important.
One real interesting. Lying to the boss, well, everybody does that. And this is probably not a good idea in a healthcare system. But lying to yourself is probably also not a good idea in a healthcare system.
So you think that would help? You think downsizing and focusing?
Well,
the VA was originally focused on combat injuries. That's what it was about.
No, I'm reading. I'm talking about these fixes to the VA. I'm not sure downsizing is a good idea, because then I would lose healthcare. But I am talking until I get some Medicare. But I am talking about giving $400 million in bonuses to people that have lied to get them. that, first of all, providing the bonuses. You know, pay somebody a salary. This is part of the corporate culture that they've adopted into the
VA. That's right. This is corporate culture. These demands that you accomplish a certain stuff at a certain time, and you get rewarded and you get punished if you don't do it. And if you have an irrational system, it just puts you in. I just wanted to ask you before we wrap up, Mike. What's your personal experience of going over to the VA and stuff? I mean, I know you don't like driving over to Prescott, but you can get some stuff in Cottonwood.
They have a little clinic in Cottonwood, and they do sick call every morning. Every morning at 8:30, and that's so. In order to mitigate any wait times, you get to show up at the VA at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they do old fashioned sick call. They got a physician's assistant. They got a couple of nurses running around there. There is a doctor somewhere in there, but I've never actually met him.
I think we talked before. We all go to physician's assistants. See doctors, unless you've got something really wrong with it.
And so, so any morning that I think I need it, I can get quote unquote health care, at least as good as you guys are getting, with your PAs and nurses. If I need a doctor, they take a look at me during sick call, and they will suggest that I get over to the Prescott VA. Now, there's a van sitting there, and I imagine one way or another, somebody will drive that van over if I really needed it to Prescott or to Phoenix or to Tucson, to the U of A. So that's the deal. You have the triage going on at the Cottonwood Clinic. You have these three larger hospitals that specialize in a whole list of conditions. That seems to cover everything. And my experience at two of the three of those, I've never been to the U of A one, the one connected to the U of A in Tucson, but I've been to the Prescott VA several times and to the Phoenix VA a few times. And, it's a little bit, it's kind of nice. It's a little bit nostalgia for me. It's been a long time since I've been in the military. And so it's like a little bit of a step back, and certainly things are run. Oh, yeah, I remember how this goes. Well, for good or for ill, but they feel like they have an efficient system, so it made me chuckle. And you see doctors that, they seem competent. Their eyeballs are all in one place, and they have, able to walk a straight line most of the time. And I don't smell too much. Anyway, it seems to be adequate care, and they have donuts. That's all I care about.
One thing I'd like to make clear is that although they're still doing the investigation, they found that the problems are widespread. They are really, much worse in the Southwest sector and in one or two others. That's why you get such a disparity in recollections of or accounts of service by veterans, is that in some places VA is health centers are run wonderfully, and others they're not. The other issue is and we've talked about off the air before about the shortage of medical personnel, and the Phoenix hospital. What was it, 4,000, people they were short? It was a huge number anyway. And part of the problem is that the doctors and medical personnel are asked to see, more patients, for less money than they could make in the private sector. So if you really want to make an impact on it, you make sure the money gets to the doctors and the medical personnel.
Well, and you saw the statistics from private practice. The more profitable the procedure, the quicker you can get in civilian life to see a doctor. If it's not a profitable thing, it's a much longer wait time. And the civilian, it's just what you were saying about the Southwest, the civilian wait time vary tremendously from where you are and what part of the country, what city, what town and stuff. And so there's a huge disparities out there in the civilian healthcare systems too.
But the point is you can't condemn the whole system, and you can't condemn everybody working in the system. It's really varies.
To be more specific, I waited the same amount of time to see a dermatologist as I did to see a civilian dermatologist. In fact, I saw the same dermatologist. I got a voucher and went to my dermatologist. I waited about the same amount of time I would wait for a civilian. Now, and I have friends that have needed cardiological services. They have gotten in pretty quickly. So, once again, anecdotally, we don't have the same thing to report. Okay, so we're done with this show. What are we doing?
I don't know.
All right.
I have no idea.
Whatever it is, it'll be really good.
It will be really, really
We'd
good.
We'd like to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks for helping out. We'd like to thank Democrats of the Verde Valley for helping out. We'd like to thank anybody that helps out. And yes, we will be doing another fundraiser at Jim Lederbetter's. Stay tuned.
And listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.